Well met, and welcome to episode 164, the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for January 21st, 2018. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. Greetings, this is Bill Walthall, and in this podcast we conclude our discussion of The Tempest with a directorial concept, a cast, a look at the speech, and a wrap-up. But let's start off with the concept. Anyone who's been with us knows this podcast and knows that I like to come up with a directorial concept for a possible production of the play. So what do I see for The Tempest? Honestly, I don't know. I do know that I don't see it as a film. I see Taymor did as well as anyone with this cinematic form, both with its opportunities for realism and its too-good-to-be-true temptations of movie magic. No, I think I want to keep this on stage. Not something epic, you know, like Les Mis or Phantom-sized, something more intimate. I'm not sure I'm talking black box theater-sized, but an audience setting that feels connected physically to the action on stage, possibly in the round, possibly on a rotating stage. There was a production of A Streetcar Named Desire a couple of years back with Gillian Anderson at the Young Vic Theatre in London that used a revolving set. I saw the movie house rebroadcast of that production, and while the use of multiple cameras took away from this all-sides-visible concept, I could see how it created a great sense of actor grounding and reality, and I think that's what I would want. It's so easy to go completely ethereal with this play, as with Midsummer. And like that play, the best productions of both plays that I've seen has had some part of their concept that the audience could connect with, either with a historical setting, like Midsummer, or an incredibly rocky physical set for The Tempest. Of course, that Teller-Posner-Carney production from a couple of years back wasn't exactly realistic with its use of magic, but it also wasn't fairy magical. I see three, maybe four stairways leading down below the stage for entrances and exits, and a platform that could sink below and rise above the stage as well. I think the opening scene on the ship might benefit greatly from the revolving stage. As I say this, I'm now kind of seeing an outlining scaffolding without walls. I see actors of the boat up on the scaffolding, maybe each holding a lantern to illuminate their faces in the pitch blackness. Then when the ship crashes, they could jump slash fall from the scaffolding, and then the lights come up with Miranda and Prospero center stage rising above the stage within that open scaffolding. I think the scaffolding could also be used for Ariel, a character that I could see being played by an acrobat who flies and jumps from level to level on the scaffolding. I'm not quite sure how to pull off the disappearing banquet scene in Act 3, but I do see the participants of the wedding mask to be raised on the scaffolding. Caliban, I'm not quite sure what to do. I liked what Teller and Posner did with the two intertwined acrobatic actors, but I'm not going to copy that. But I want to move away from the noble, savage, person of color presentation of the character that you see a lot these days. I really want to do this as half man, half fish, as it is described in the text. But I'm not sure I want to do this through makeup or costuming or maybe a bit of both. At the end of the play, as the human characters all leave the stage, save for Prospero and his spirit Ariel, I do have one big special effect. I want him to slam his staff on the floor, the stage will cease to revolve, and the scaffolding will fall, crumble to the ground, allowing Ariel to escape out through the audience, and Prospero then to deliver his epilogue to the audience around him. So, that's the concept. How about a cast? Prospero. Person needs to be old enough to have a teenage daughter, but not too young, and old enough to make believable the every third thought of his grave statement at the end. There's got to be some power and gravitas to the performer, but also something that can show the audience a pre-island self-centered and distractedness. Now, I could go for my old standby Idris Elba. Geez, I love him in just about everything. When I cast him in just about everything. But I just saw Richard Jenkins in The Shape of Water, and I think he'd be great. There's a sadness in his portrayal there that I think could work here, and I think his anger would play more emotionally disturbing than violent. Miranda. Again, I could go with another gee, I wish I could cast her in everything person, Saoirse Ronan, lately of Lady Bird, but I could also go with either of the two young leads from the new sitcom spinoff of Blackish, Grownish, Yara Shahidi or Francia Risa. The former plays the college-aged daughter from Blackish, the latter her roommate. Both are young and appealing, and both can play innocent. Ariel, just get me an acrobat that can act. Caliban. Jeez, I don't know. There's a part of me that wants to see Peter Dinklage from Game of Thrones, what he could do with that role, but I don't want to be accused of linking diminutiveness with deformity. Of course, now that I think about it, Dinklage would make a great Prospero. Yeah, that could really work. But I'm getting sidetracked, rather willingly, because who do you cast as Caliban? If this was 30 years ago, I'd say Willem Dafoe for his angularly interesting features. But today? I don't know. I keep going back to maybe Walton Goggins, lately of Vice Principals, but mainly from one of my favorite shows from the past few years, Justified. There's a real sense of danger there. As for the rest, I'm not that concerned with. Those big four are the ones that I will probably need to carry any production that goes on stage. It's one of my favorite speeches, pretty much from the entire canon, let alone The Tempest. But you've probably been noticing, both here and in the blog, I've been avoiding it like the plague. You know, it's the speech. Our revels now are ended. These, our actors, as I foretold you, were all spirits and are melted into air, into thin air. And like the baseless fabric of this vision, the cloud-capped towers, the gorgeous palaces, the solemn temples, the great globe itself, yea, all which it inherits shall dissolve, and like this insubstantial pageant faded, leave not a rack behind. We are such stuff as dreams are made on, and our little life is rounded with a sleep. Side note, the last time I wrote about this speech over 30 years ago, it didn't go well, but I have to go back even further to start this story. When I was a senior in high school, I was the editor-in-chief of my school's yearbook. I used this speech as a thematic background for the opening section of the book. Yeah, there's nothing like a little adolescent male pretension. Anyway, it was a favorite speech of mine. So when I took a Shakespeare class at UCLA, taught by the great Professor Rhodes, and I got a chance to write on a speech, this is the one I picked. In his class, another digression, he had a seating chart, as he wanted to call you by name. If he could call you without looking at the chart, then you had made it. This was a goal, one that I achieved about midway through the course after I had written about the concept of manhood in Macbeth. And for me, that was probably the best paper I wrote at UCLA. Got an A- on that paper. He was a tough grader. And he actually asked for a copy of it. I was over the moon. So when I got a chance to write on a speech later in the semester, you know which one I picked. This one. I poured my heart and soul, but alas, not enough of my brain, into the paper. And on the last page, beyond the grade, C+, were simply two words. What happened? Ouch. So here I am, 30-plus years later, nearing the end of the discussion of this play, and of the originally planned canonical approach to the plays, and I'm faced with this speech again. Beyond the emotional baggage I carry regarding this speech, there's just so much else that comes with it. And damn near all of it has to do with what seems to many to be a valedictory address, a goodbye speech. And I'm not quite sure what I want to say about it. Yes, there's a certain wistful farewell in there. Our revels now are ended. Party time is over, kids. But as it turns out, the party isn't real. It isn't tangible. They're just visions. And hell, it's not even clear whether we're seeing these visions with our eyes. If we are, those visions vanish before our eyes and leave nothing but memories. If we aren't seeing them with our eyes, then those visions are like memories of the now. Dreams. But life is a dream, and we're all asleep. For me, the most fascinating word in that speech is rack. It's what's not even left behind when all of this fades away. Now, rack could mean a bank of cloud, fog, or mist, a wisp of cloud or vapor, also as a mass noun, mist, fog, sea spray, which is very fitting for this island set play. But for me, it could just as easily mean the third definition, a frame on which cloth, parchment, etc. is stretched, usually before drying. I get that use from the use of fabric earlier in the speech. And the connotation of the frame is more than just drying wet or washed clothes, but also paint on canvas. Not only do the visions disappear, but so does the painting. Heck, so does all of the frame. Art is gone. The frame is gone. It's all gone. It's all in your head, son. And it's the context of the speech that makes it so weird for me. It's meant to be comforting to Ferdinand and Miranda after the sudden ending by Prospero of their wedding mask. The kids are freaked out by the disappearance of their entertainment, its sudden and seemingly violent vanishing, and this speech is meant to comfort them. Remember, it's led into by, "You do look, my son, in a moved sort, as if you were dismayed. Be cheerful, sir. It's all been a dream. It's just a dream. Just keep telling yourself that." Has that line ever comforted anyone? Party time is over indeed. Shakespeare fans, need a poster to hang in your room? Teachers, need some nifty handouts for your students to peruse as you introduce them to the Bard? Or are you just in the mood for some printable versions of some of the cool infographics found on this website? Well, regardless of how you answered those questions, I've got a scratch for that itch, a solution for that problem. Check out the Bill Shakespeare Project page on the Teachers Pay Teachers website. You can find character maps for Romeo and Juliet and Julius Caesar, previewing the characters and their relationships to one another. I've also got geographical maps so your students can wrap their heads around travels within the plays Troilus and Cressida. Yes, even TNC gets some love. All's Well That Ends Well as well. See what I did there. Plus Pericles and Othello. There's also handouts on the so-called history in Macbeth and Julius Caesar, time in Romeo and Juliet, and violence in Titus Andronicus. Also, you'll find entire packets of handouts for both King Lear and Macbeth, including scene-by-scene timelines and the interactions as well as relationships between the characters. And I'll be adding even more soon. Plus, this is where you can find the printable version of the new and improved periodic table of Shakespeare. Some of these are for free, and some are for purchase, but all can be found on the Bill Shakespeare Project page on teacherspayteachers.com. Oh, and if you want to purchase a pre-printed poster-sized version of that periodic table, well then head on over to the Bill Shakespeare Project page on redbubble.com. Links to both of these sites can be found in the left-hand margin of this website. The Tempest. So, I think I like this play more for the memories and nostalgic feelings it induces in me than what's on the page, or what's on the stage in some cases. Yes, two of my favorite moments in Shakespearean theaters have come with this play, but one of those, I'm absolutely positive, is out of nostalgia. Now, on another read, I'm not blown away. Don't get me wrong, I still rate this in the top half, barely, of my favorite plays in the canon. It's number two in my list of romances, just behind Pericles. But really, I'm kind of underwhelmed, given my memories and good feelings about the play. I don't know. Maybe it's because I took such a long break during the reading of this. It just feels so lightweight. Yes, I know, it deals with probably the most important of all human endeavors, forgiveness. But not a whole lot happens during this afternoon on the island. I think it should feel monumental. Families are reunited, a new family is born out of love, servants are set free, political situations are righted. Only it doesn't. Maybe that's Shakespeare's point here at the end of his career. Even the most monumental things in life are just everyday occurrences. It's just life, and life is but a dream. I guess I wanted something bigger here at the end. And maybe that's at the root of my ambivalence. This is the end of what I had originally planned as the project. Maybe my mixed feelings are because of the fact that this does feel like an ending of sorts. Maybe it's just that I don't want it to end. Enjoyed this podcast, but you haven't been following along with our daily blog entry since our last regular podcast, and that, again, was just a week ago. Can you believe that? You've missed out on subjects including a question of genre. Our revels now are ended. Midpoint? Really? Friday non-film focus, Desdemona's D-bag dad, and Tempest, the wrap-up. So if you'd like more in-depth discussions or just want a daily fix, check out the blog entries at thebillshakespeareproject.com or become a fan of our Facebook page and our Twitter feed. Remember that those social media outlets are more for Shakespeare news and notes than for discussions of our current play under study. Also, if you have any question or comment about this or any other Bill Shakespeare Project podcast or blog entry, you can always lob me an email at bill@thebillshakespeareproject.com. Join us again for our next podcast when... Jeez, I don't know where we go from here. It could be the end. It certainly is the ending of what I had planned as a 3-year project 8.5 years ago. Maybe it goes on. Who knows? But if it does continue, I hope you'll continue this journey with me. And in that case, I hope to see you then. You've been listening to the Bill Shakespeare Project podcast for January 21st, 2018. For our blog and previous podcast episodes, check us out at thebillshakespeareproject.com. And we shall see thee anon.